5. Patriots down by 3. 26 seconds to go. Shotgun snap to May. Moved onto the pocket. Throws a pass. End zone. Intercepted in the end zone. Was he inbounds? Intercepted by Job. Seattle has picked off May. They've done it again. The defense of Seattle has done it again. Drake May has thrown his third interception in this quarter.
Third interception of the quarter. I wasn't going to bump in with that there, Seth. We're going to talk about the Texans here in a second and the season coming up. But the TV is on in our studio here, and obviously right out of the shoot on ESPN on Get Up, they're showing highlights of last night's game. Josh Job getting his feet in bounds.
Yeah, that's impressive.
On that third interception that we just heard Harlan describe was very impressive. Getting toes on both feet down within what looked like an inch of the boundary there was just really impressive.
If he had been
body control.
If he had been an actual Patriots wide receiver, it would have been a great throw by Drake May. Drake May put it where just exactly where only Job and the sideline could catch it. It was really a perfectly well placed interception.
It was he's an interception placement specialist, Drake May, that's how they describe it. At least he was last night.
There's probably a good chance that he was shaving points in that game. Because if Drake May is as awesome as everybody told me he was, it's one thing. Look, interceptions are going to happen. Yeah. Every great quarterback has thrown multiple interceptions in a game before. Three interceptions in the fourth quarter of a game that you're leading is damned impressive.
First New England quarterback to throw three interceptions in a quarter since Tom Brady, which is not a surprise.
Right.
Brady played quarterback for 20 years. This is the part of it that's interesting. Tom Brady in 2001.
Oh, wow.
So this isn't like first quarterback to throw three interceptions in a quarter for the Patriots, and it's Tom Brady in 2016.
And I'm guessing was it actually a victory in that game, or was it?
Well, that was Brady. Yeah. That was the year Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe.
Doesn't paint the whole picture. Like, Brady had a lot of multi-interception games that he either won or they didn't happen in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And even if he had, it happens. But three straight possessions with an interception. And in that situation, you're in field goal range. You don't have to throw that football to somebody in your face. You don't have to throw it up for grabs. And his freakishly good deep ball percentage and prowess last year, that's the kind of thing where you go into it and you think, okay, well, first year in that offense, teams have some time to figure out exactly what you are in the offseason. And I think it's probably indicative of what's to come. There's no way he's going to be as effective at the deep ball, especially if A.J. Brown is out for the year. Not that A.J. Brown was doing anything spectacular in that game. He was averaging 8.7 yards on his three receptions. But like trying to throw it up for grabs to Romeo Doubs.
Yep.
And it wasn't even it wasn't a 50-50 ball. He threw it directly to the defender who ended up tipping the ball up on the one of his three interceptions.
We should point out, by the fourth quarter, A.J. Brown was out of the game with an injury, so he's playing without him. But still, it's inexcusable.
C.J. Stroud playing without Nico Collins.
And Dalton Schultz in that Patriots game. Yeah, for most of that Patriots game was Schultz.
That was inexcusable by C.J.
And it was inexcusable. right. There's no justifying three interceptions in a quarter or four interceptions in a half. It's just
Though, Drake May now over his last through the playoffs and then this game, I think it's 10 turnovers total.
It's 11. I'm looking at the numbers right here. He's got 11 turnovers in his last 7 games.
Okay.
He's got 11.
I want to say it's 10 turnovers in his last 5 games.
That could be. Yeah. So 11. No, his last 5 games. Sorry, 7 touchdowns. My bad. 7 touchdowns, 11 turnovers. So last 5 games. Sorry, Seth. You're right. Last 5 games, 7 touchdowns, 11 turnovers. The 11 turnovers are 7 interceptions and 4 lost fumbles. It feels like all of those lost fumbles were caused by Will Anderson that playoff game. 24 sacks taken in 5 games also.
Mm-hmm.
Not insignificant. 143 yards lost on sacks and 6.6 yards per attempt, which is pedestrian at best. So
he does have smaller than average hands.
Does he?
Yeah, he doesn't have Kenny Pickett hands.
Okay.
But he does have, he's in the 22nd percentile at the combine.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, no, 16th percentile for quarterbacks at the combine.
Okay, all right.
So he does have small hands.
All right. Something to keep an eye on.
It's pathetic.
Drake May's hands this coming season, So the Patriots lose last night in the season opener to the Seattle Seahawks. All right, the Athletic does this across all the sports, their hopometer, where they essentially, it's pretty simple. They take the pulse of the fan bases of the 32 teams in the NFL and just simply ask, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic? That's it. And the percentage of fans that are optimistic is the measure of your hopometer. Mm-hmm. And so the teams that are at the top here, I think, are, you know, pretty understandable. The Rams are number one, 98.7% optimism. I'd love to know what the 1.3% are saying that are pessimistic. In fact, there's one here. They put quotes. Games are played on the field, not on paper. Too much hype around the Rams.
I agree with that pessimist.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Too much hype?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only problem with that is, like, whenever somebody tries to, you know, they really think they're smarter than everybody else. What I realize is that actually the preseason prognostications aren't the actual deciding factor. The games are played on the field.
It's,
go die.
It's
a stupid pessimist. You're already dead inside anyway.
It's also the peril of having it be one or the other choice. You know, like there's with no in between. Like trepidation is not the same as pessimism about your team.
But it is. I mean, look, they were a really good team last year, too, and obviously wasn't enough.
So the Texans fell on this hopometer poll eighth, which is about where they're falling in the power rankings right now. You know, if you look at various power rankings around the NFL of the experts that cover the league, generally speaking, the Texans are anywhere from like fourth through 12th, somewhere in there. And eighth is right in the middle. And they're eighth on the hopometer. Here's what some of the Texan fans, optimistic and pessimistic, are saying about the Texans. See if you agree with these, Seth. This is an optimist. The best defense in the NFL somehow got better. The offense only has to be average. If we somehow don't win a divisional round game again, I'll eat my hat.
I'll eat my hat.
That's such an old school saying.
I know. back when people used to say that, it was a tougher hat to eat.
Like
a derby or something like that, as opposed to a baseball cap.
Right.
So, the best defense in the NFL somehow got better. Again, I'll be that annoying guy that says, it's not, the games aren't played on paper. That's the biggest, I guess, question I would have, or the fear I would have about the defense not being better is all injury related, which you can say about every team regardless. But yeah,
they had really good injury luck last year.
Right. Yeah. Especially,
really good.
You know, Jalen, they weathered the storm with Jalen Petrie and one series of Kamari Lassiter being out. And then, Kamari was out in the final game of the season too.
Yeah.
But, I think the injuries, which you can say about any team, like other than that, I feel pretty damn good about the Texans' defense being really, really good again.
Texan optimist. The Texans finally have all the ingredients of a Super Bowl team. Stroud and the O-line are question marks, but if they hit, why can't this team be this year's Seahawks?
Yeah.
And I would agree with that.
I guess that's a big if, you know. Like, it's only the minor detail of 6 of 11 of your players on offense that if all you need is the six guys.
Including your most important guy.
Right. The quarterback really counts for.
It's not your slot receiver, two linemen, and a tight end. Like it's
all they need is a quarterback, an offensive line,
right.
And there we go. Off to the races.
Yep. Pessimist. Don't have faith in C.J. Stroud. He's not our QB for the future, in my opinion. This matches the pessimists that text this show.
No, I know, and 100%, but I also think that's where I'm actually a little bit surprised that the Texans didn't have more pessimists, because it always feels, and the people that are negative are going to be louder usually. I felt like the fan base is, I don't want to say evenly split between hope for C.J. Stroud or support for C.J. Stroud and pessimism about C.J. Stroud. I think by this point in the year, most of the fan base has worked themselves into being cautiously optimistic, at least, and then a few diehards. And then so I was just surprised at the pessimism. Because like, if you're pessimistic about your quarterback, that means you're pessimistic about the team.
So I think
by and large, people have, you know, they've given themselves a lot of pep talks back into believing in C.J. for now.
They have
undying faith in C.J. Stroud. For now.
Yeah. Well, the numbers are barely. I said the Texans are eighth, and they are. I didn't give the percentage. 90.5% optimism.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, if the quarterback is sort of the harbinger for this thing, if they're the barometer for this, then at least according to this poll in The Athletic, that most Texan fans are either optimistic to begin with or have worked themselves into optimism about CJ Stroud and the team. 90.5%. When we get to some of the percentages at the bottom, it'll be pretty jarring. And you'll see why 90.5% is pretty good. Two more here. Optimist. Best defense in the league, a better offensive line, David Montgomery. CJ just has to be average, but I think he looks more like his rookie year this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess by definition, an optimist is going to say the offensive line is better. And right. CJ's better.
If listening to people like you and me who are out at practice every day, and by all the reports of the way the offensive line is functioning,
they are better.
And that's how you have to judge offensive lines. You can't judge them. I remember when the Texans had one of the best pass protectors in the league at left tackle and their offensive line still sucked? Yeah. It's about the sum of all the parts, and they've looked a lot better this year than they were last year. So I'll be very surprised if they're not a better offensive line, especially in the first three games of the season. I did think that comment, the way I read it the first time, it said best defense in the league, a better offensive line. Mm-hmm. I read that as, wait, is he saying the offensive line is better than the defense?
Better than the defense, yeah.
Well, that is not what I saw out at practice, but they were a lot better against that defense this year than
absolutely.
They were last year.
All right, last one here, pessimist, Texans pessimist. Okay, this is a good one. Don't trust the offensive coordinator. Defense will again be dominant, but can't always carry the scoreboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick Caley, because CJ's game was so bad against New England last year, Nick Caley has not been catching a lot of scrutiny this offseason, in my opinion. At least not proportional to how he also needs to improve over last year.
Yeah, I think that it's a combo there. And I think CJ working with Nick Caley and how well they work together, that's the big question and the huge variable there. It seems they've both said all the right things, but mm-hmm. CJ always said the right things about Bobby Slowick too, right up until Bobby Slowick was fired. So we'll see about that. Defense, saying defense can't always carry the scoreboard. That is the truth year in, year out. And there are teams that make it to the Super Bowl and win Super Bowls because of their defense. The tough thing though is that if you have to play four games in the playoffs, it's sometimes, man, you could have the best defense of all time, and it's just not going to work out if you can't score points.
Nope.
You look at the Rams versus the Patriots that year in the Super Bowl. You know, Wade Phillips had one of the best defensive game plans I've ever seen versus Tom Brady, and it wasn't enough to win the Super Bowl.
No, the Rams scored 3 points that day.
Yeah.
13-3 was the final score of that Super Bowl. Among other teams you might be curious about, Jacksonville actually is sixth on this. The seven teams whose fan bases are more optimistic than the Texans, according to the Athletics Hopometer, are in order. The Rams are at number one. Then the Bengals are number two. That's interesting, given that they haven't made the playoffs since 2022. But I would imagine their defense, if I went and read why Bengal fans are optimistic, it's all those moves they probably made, trading for Dexter Lawrence, etc. Denver is three. Seattle is four. Not surprised by any of these. New England is five. Jacksonville, six. Baltimore, seven.
Jacksonville 6, the one pessimist comment that I think I agree with, hit the best possible outcomes in a lot of situations last year, lost key pieces, and had a rough draft. So the draft, I really try to hesitate judging drafts until you actually see the guys on the field. It might be that the Jaguars are they just knew better what their team meant, the perceived reach that they had on every player. But the best possible outcome in a lot of situations last season, I think if you look at their win streak at the end of the season or the run they went on, it was against a lot of haggard football teams. They had a really, really good win versus Denver on the road. And I credit them that. That was a really good game by the Jaguars. But even some of the situations like was it when they played the Raiders or the Cardinals where they, they should have lost it on the last play of the game.
It was the Raiders.
Yeah,
that was a close game. That was a one-point game.
Overtime game. And, I think there's so much about the Jaguars right now where they are operating like they think they're the smartest guys in the room.
Yeah.
And we know how that goes. You either are or you're a damn fool.
They won, let's see, 9 of their final 10 games. The only game they lost was that game here at NRG Stadium to the Texans, and
that was before they had gone out and gotten Jacoby Myers.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And so, so they got Jacoby Myers shortly after that, I believe. And so they won 9 of their last 10 games. But these are the quarterbacks they beat: Geno Smith, okay, Justin Herbert, that's good. Jacoby Brissett, Cam Ward, Riley Leonard, Brady Cook, don't even know who that is. You pointed out Bo Nix, good win against the Denver Broncos. Phillip Rivers, Cam Ward.
Yeah.
So they didn't really, I mean, other than Justin Herbert and Bo Nix, and it's not like Bo Nix is a world beater or anything. He's just better than all these other guys. He's a legitimate starter in the NFL.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, you know what? Jacoby Meyers' first game with the Jaguars was
that's what I thought. I thought they traded for him right after that Raiders game.
He had three receptions in that game, but yeah, that was, and then it ended up, so it didn't kick in immediately, but Jacoby Meyers was a real shot in the arm for them.
He was. Well, they gave him an extension. Yeah. That's how good it went. They gave him an extension a few games into his time as a Jag. They liked him that much. And they've got a good receiving core, man. Like Jacksonville, I think, they're a good team. I don't think they're going to be 13-4 again, and I think the Texans are better than the Jags. But if Brian Thomas Jr. figures things out like he did 2 years ago, I mean, that's a good, Jacoby Meyers, Brian Thomas Jr., and Parker Washington is a really good trio of receivers if Brian Thomas pulls his head out.
Well, Brian Thomas, he did pull his head out of his butt after Jacoby Meyers got there.
Yeah.
I think part of it was that they were able to just use Brian Thomas Jr. in the role he was more comfortable in.
Yeah.
And Jacoby Meyers could be the guy that had to be brave and actually take hard contact and everything when he caught the ball.
Yep. Yep. Speaking of the Jags, this was Pete Prisco, who picked the Jags third in his power ranking. He's picking the Jaguars to go to and win the Super Bowl this year. Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com, who lives in Jacksonville, picked the Jags to win the Super Bowl. Here's Pete Prisco explaining why he thinks the Jags are going to win the Super Bowl.
I think this is a better football team than they were a year ago. They're not going to win as many games. The schedule's tougher, no question about it. But they're a better team. Why? Shutdown corner, Travis Hunter. You add him to the mix. The one corner becomes the two corner becomes the three becomes the four. All of a sudden, you're better at that position. You can cover better. I think Trayvon Walker, who played hurt all last year, is going to be a beast this year for the defensive front. Armstead is healthy. That's big for them in situational rush and the passer. You flip to the other side. The wide receivers are going to be, the offense is going to be dynamic. Trevor Lawrence in his second year and Liam Cohn's offense is going to put up big numbers in the passing game. They're going to score a lot of points. This team is a better football team than they were a year ago, better equipped to make the push into the Super Bowl this year, just not going to have the same record.
Yeah, I agree with some of the things he's saying about the Jags, but I don't know why some of those things equate to them being a better football team than last year.
Right. Yeah, like the other than just continuity, you know, they've had that they've
well, or if you trust, because you brought this up, I brought this up, is that we've seen this movie with Trevor Lawrence before, where he has a good second half of a season, they make a push to the postseason, they flame out in the postseason, but they go into this following year with huge optimism. It happened in 2022. In Doug Peterson's first year, the year after Urban Meyer almost ruined Trevor Lawrence. And Doug Peterson really coached him up in the second half of the season. They make a push. They make the playoffs. They even won a playoff game against the Chargers. They gave the Chiefs everything they could handle in the playoffs in Kansas City. Everybody goes into 2023 with all this optimism, and then they stink in 2023. So there are a lot of the same elements to this. You know, Liam Cohen, first year, coming off a year where they were picking in the top five, and they make a big push. They win eight straight games down the stretch. Neither of those teams lost after that game here in Week 10, the Texans nor the Jaguars. They both won out the rest of the year. So it's the same dynamic. I guess if I were Pete Prisco, part of what I would say is I just think more highly of Liam Cohen than I do Doug Peterson as a head coach.
Yeah, and I think that would be a fair opinion to have at this point.
I think so. Cohen did a great job last year.
I was honestly surprised the Bills were lower than the Texans on this hopometer. But I think that's it's a combination of Western New York cynicism and then institutional battered dog syndrome.
Yes.
I think they've come up short in the playoffs enough, not to mention back in the day with the Super Bowl, that they hold in reserve a little bit.
Yep. The bottom six on the hopometer, Tennessee, 27th, Washington, 28th. How about that? Washington was in the NFC title game in 2024. Like less than 2 years ago, they were playing in the NFC title game. 28th on the hopometer. Arizona, 29. Atlanta, 30. Miami, 31. Cleveland, with 2.7% optimism, is in last place. Poor Cleveland.
Despite having the guy that they chose, that they drafted, that they traded such heavy capital for, Deshaun Watson.
As their starting quarterback.
And they're starting off the season versus Jacksonville, where Deshaun's record versus Jacksonville is, what is it?
It's 7-0.
7-0.
He's 7-0.
Deshaun Watson, one of those games he had to take a bus to the game.
Punctured
because
lung.
He had a punctured lung.
Yep. So I think
I wish Kirk Herbstreit was doing that game so he could talk about Deshaun's plight and how much he's had to overcome
heroism.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right. So that's the old hopo meter. Let's get to D'Amico Ryans. This was D'Amico on Texans radio with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer talking about the Texans offensive line, which is something a lot of you were talking about. Here's the head coach.
Man, for our offensive line, last year at this time, I was thinking back, we were still kind of shuffling guys, trying to figure it out, like who was going out there, our first five guys. Well, our five guys now, they've been working together for the past couple weeks.
Okay.
Right, so they have that continuity. They have that, hey, the guards and the tackles, those guys have been communicating with each other for the past couple weeks. So it's not fresh and new hitting week one.
I love how he makes a couple of weeks, or tries to. I don't know if he's trying to do this or not.
Yeah.
Like, make a couple of weeks sound like an eternity.
Yeah.
Like, these guys, you know how long these guys have been working? I know we were shuffling Juice Scruggs and Lakin Tomlinson at left guard last year. I know that we completely reshuffled our O-line in the middle of the season and put Trent Brown in there, which actually ended up working. I know we did all these things. There were all these moving parts on the – I know that our rookie – tackle who was working at left tackle all training camp had to play right tackle against one of the best defenses in football, one of the best defensive lines in football in his debut as an NFL football. I understand all these things, but guys, ladies, we've been working together for 2 weeks now.
Right. It was midway through training camp. We switched everything up around again, and then we go.
We're completing each other's sentences out here.
He's like a truant officer who's congratulating a kid for making it to school 5 days in a row.
Right.
You know, like,
We were here all week.
You've really turned it around. Let's keep this up.
That's great. I don't know if you guys have realized, but we've been working together for two whole weeks, all right?
You know what? There's one thing. I was actually listening to the Locked On Bills podcast yesterday. Joe Marino is the name of the guy that does that. I like him a lot. I've listened to him during the offseason a bit. But he is the one that he pointed out that Evan Brown has, you know, he's been a journeyman, but he has been a starter for the past four or five seasons. And that when D'Amico talks about the communication, I mean, so many of the issues the Texans had on the offensive line last year weren't about the physical matchups. That wasn't the most egregious thing. It was the miscommunications. It was the guys not being on the same page, just not working together well as a unit. Having a veteran center there, which, again, going back to, man, the plan in year one for C.J. Stroud was to have a rookie center hiking the ball to a rookie quarterback while a rookie offensive coordinator was calling the shot.
Yes.
Last year, you have a rookie, you know, and the Juice Scruggs ended up getting injured, but that was the plan going into it. Last year, you've got a center who had played a total of about 79 snaps in the NFL. You had a rookie offensive coordinator snapping the ball to C.J. Stroud. I'm just happy to have a veteran center in there.
Yes. Yeah. That's a huge upgrade. We hope. I mean, an experience is certainly a huge upgrade.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be all pro.
No.
The guy's got to be running the right damn plays.
Be average, dude. I would sign up for average from Evan Brown. I'd sign up for average from all five of these guys right now, honestly. Hey, I asked this question to Landry and Cody and Reggie when we were doing our stream the other night. I'm curious your thoughts on this. If you could pick one of these two things to just be average this year, just average, and you leave the other one up to the gods, would you sign up for the Texans' offensive line being average this year or C.J. Stroud being average this year?
C.J. Stroud was average last year, so I'll take average offensive line.
Okay.
I think that,
with the idea that like, C.J.'s not going to crater or something like that.
Yeah, and I could leave the other one up to the gods. Yeah, I think if the offensive line is average, then C.J. ends up being a much better version of himself.
That's what we arrived at, too. That's the right answer. Yeah. Good job.
Everything comes back to, I mean, like we talk about the wide receivers, talk about the running backs, anything on the offensive side of the ball, talk about the tight ends.
Yeah.
It really does come back to the offensive line.
Yep.
And what, and that being at the very least, you can judge CJ from, you know, without having to make excuses about having one of the worst rushing attacks in the league. You know, the offensive line last year got way too much credit for the sack rate going down. That was about C.J. Stroud and the way he was operating. Mm-hmm. C.J. grew up a lot in terms of understanding when to throw the ball away, when to take chances, when not to, when to take the easy money.
Yeah.
And he got sacked half as often as the year before, but it's not because the offensive line was brilliant in pass protection or anything.
The only way you answer that question, who would you, if you could sign up for one to be average right now, O-line or C.J. Stroud, the only way you say C.J. Stroud is if you don't think he's an average quarterback to begin with.
Yeah.
If you're the guy, if you're C.J. is a bum guy texting in, then you sign up for that because you just feel like, hey, it's quarterback play is what decides things, and we need our quarterback. Now, C.J. was decidedly below average in the loss to New England, and quite frankly, the win over Pittsburgh.
Yeah, when I say year, I guess I was thinking of season, regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I didn't mean to.
There are times where I feel like people sometimes people gotta maybe watch a little bit more football outside of just your own team because the perception of what I remember pointing out that the Texans' offense was they were bad. The scoring they were like 12th in scoring, but that didn't tell the whole picture. When it came to a lot of other things, they were bottom of the barrel.
Red zone, a big one.
But people would say name an offense that was worse. Like Miami Dolphins, Cleveland Browns,
Arizona
Cardinals.
Were you at the Arizona game?
The Raiders. Yeah. There's so many.
You watched some of these teams play the Texans last year.
Those are genuinely bad offenses and genuinely bad quarterbacks.
Yep. Okay, so the Texans are playing the Bills this weekend. Among the storylines in this game is that the Texans are going to be going against C.J. Gardner-Johnson, I believe for the first time since they cut him loose in week three. Last season, and so he's a Buffalo Bill, and he was meeting with the media yesterday after practice, and he could kind of tell what they were trying to get him to say things.
And there's a pause at the end here where you just need to know he's doing the zipped lip thing. That's where if you can imagine him at the very end when there's a long pause, he's just zipping his lip.
Zips his lip, turns the key, and then tosses the phantom key away. And it's a question about C.J. Stroud. We should point that out when he does that. So take a listen. This is C.J. Gardner-Johnson trying to not take the rat poison here from the assembled media.
Question one, just focus on being a Bill. But then when you focus on the other you give them bulletin board material, I guess. I'm not really worried about them. They're not worried about me. Yeah, they got their team, got our team. We focus on winning the game. They're focused on winning the game. But I'm not focused on being a great Buffalo Bill for Sunday and not really tuning into the extracurricular.
I'm sorry. How excited are you to get out there? Didn't have as much preseason action.
I'm a vet. I got enough games under my belt to, you know, go out there and do what I need to do. But to answer your question, how do I get prepared for a season like this? It ties in with this one. It's just basically just stay within your team. Stay in the building. Stay working out. Trust the coaches and trust the process because everybody waiting for what CD do because I ain't seen any preseason. But it's like, why are you surprised on what I do? If I go out and ball, it's going to be the same that you've seen in previous spots. So it's like my motto this year is to focus on being a great person, a player in that Bills jersey. All the other stuff don't really matter right now.
What did you learn about C.J. Stroud last year playing with him a little bit and what you see from him on film?
Next question.
Okay. Yeah, so he zipped his lips.
Yep.
I feel like a lot of people were kind of reporting that or framing it as that he was throwing subtle shade at C.J. Stroud.
I think you could interpret it that way.
Yeah, I think given what he had said, though, I think he just wasn't going to comment about anything about the Texans at all.
I agree with you. You know? I just think it was something that leaves itself open to interpretation, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the three games that he played with the Texans, the offense wasn't doing all that much.
No, that's true. That is very true. They were 0-3 for a variety of reasons, including C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
You guys know my feeling about this. If Nick Caley doesn't have at least three plays specifically designed to bait C.J. Gardner-Johnson, he needs to be fired after the game.
I agree.
Doesn't mean they're going to be successful doing it. I just want to see some eye candy up there in front of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. If we knew, I'd love to know which wide receiver maybe C.J. Gardner-Johnson got into it a couple times in practice. If there's anybody that maybe he'd gotten in a tussle with or something, that's the guy you want running a crossing route in front of C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
You know,
at a coverage where he's supposed to be holding his water. Yeah.
Okay,
and you use that to bait him up.
That's a really good point. And I think, okay, I'm glad you said that. I don't think, if I had to guess,
Yeah.
I don't think it's a wide receiver. I think it's Dalton Schultz.
Oh.
I think it's Dalton Schultz. You get safeties on tight ends. Dalton Schultz is a well-known trash talker.
Yeah.
Who has been known to get into it with teammates at practice before.
We want Dalton to be a little bit like Travis Kelce in this game. You better be agitating C.J. Gardner-Johnson a little bit.
100%. Yeah.
Or a lot bit.
This is your assignment, Dalton Schultz, if you're listening, is you got to get in his ear.
Yeah.
Because I think C.J. Gardner-Johnson, I can't believe I'm saying this, I think he will go into the game with making a concerted effort not to do the things he was doing that cost him his job with the Texans. And if we're being honest, cost him millions of dollars.
Yeah.
He was still under contract to the Texans for like several million dollars for another year. And they just cut bait with him, and now he's this guy who's signing one-year, $3 million deals. If he had just been able to follow instructions, he would have made several more million dollars this season, possibly playing for the Texans. But I think he's going to try to come into this game, not trying to be part of the problem, trying to be part of the solution, but he's a psychopath.
Well, he had said that about the Super Bowl. When the Eagles won the Super Bowl, that was he knew he was telling himself, I can't be full CJ GJ today. I gotta be just be a safety net back there. And remember, in the Super Bowl, Kelce tried to get him.
He did.
Kelce got up in his face, and CJ GJ just put his hands behind his back and just stood there.
Even then, though.
Yeah.
Even then, he doesn't walk away. He stands there in Travis Kelce's face, hands behind his back, demonstrating how little it's getting to him. You know,
that's one thing that still triggers me is Travis Kelce getting away with that crap for so long.
Yeah,
where he does everything that should be a penalty, getting up in people's faces and backing them up and everything. But he's just somebody retaliates and boom.
Yep.
If he would catch more than one ball for 8 yards when they faced the Texans last time, maybe then we could be more concerned about that type of stuff.
We are joined by, I think many people's favorites, one of their growing favorite players, and that is the first draft pick of the Houston Texans. Their starting offensive lineman, Mr. Keelan Rutledge. Keelan, man, we appreciate you joining us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, man, here. Hey, we can get this yes, sir thing right on out of the way here, Keelan. I'm going to be honest with you. I've been wanting to talk to you, and I've been wanting to ask you a couple of questions. And the first thing I need to know is, Keelan, I sense a little soul coming out of you. And I think the dead giveaway was that haircut that you are rolling with, Keelan. What I need to know is, did you start wearing this? Because hey, you faded up nice. No disrespect to people at Great Clips, but that's not a Great Clips cut. I need to know who's cutting that head, and was you doing that before you got to an Atlanta?
Yeah, a little bit. I've kind of had all sorts of haircuts for a while. I had some curls on top, a little fade on the bottom.
Yeah,
but,
I caught that.
Yeah.
Hey, Keelan, let me clean this up for you. You got a black barber?
Yeah, for sure.
That's what my boy's trying to ask.
Who's cutting that head? That's it. No, man. We appreciate you joining us, man. What are you looking forward to, man? This is your first action in the NFL as you kick things off against a tough opponent in the Buffalo Bills. What are you looking forward to coming up on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, just getting out there, obviously, first time real season action, so it'd be great. Just getting out there, just looking forward to being able to run the ball, establish the ground game up front, and just, control the game the way we want to up front, so it'd be fun.
Hey, Keelan, talk a little bit about, look, we're all human here, man. We like to get patted on the ass every now and then. Now all the players do. Nick Caserio last week, I can't remember what if it's press conference or when he joined our morning show, but he went in on Keelan Rutledge being the best offensive lineman in the group, and I don't want to get off into whether you believe that or not. That's a hell of a compliment from the general manager to a rookie offensive lineman. Is that just your thoughts on kind of where you stand in his eyes and how big of a compliment that is?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate him saying that and stuff like that, but I mean, I think just how I'm critical of myself, I think I got a lot to work on. There's obviously a lot of stuff I bring to the table, but just try to be me every day. Just try to bring that certain attitude. Just try to go out there and be the most physical guy. And kind of lift the guys around me and just be who I am, be who I've always been. So that's kind of how I take it.
Has that always been Keelan Rutledge, Texans' first-round pick, offensive lineman, joining us here on The Fan? It seems like obviously your physical play has really been impressive, but I think a lot of people are viewing from a leadership standpoint, it seems like almost the changing of the tone from that offensive line group. Is that something that's just natural for you, or is that something that you really were mindful of trying to bring when you got here?
No, I mean, I think that's always been me since I can remember. I've always kind of been, you know, really super competitive, wired a certain way, and kind of bring that kind of swagger to the game. That's kind of who I've always been. So obviously, you know, I've got, you know, from high school to college, transferred that over, and then, you know, going from Middle Tennessee to Georgia Tech, I've always been the same guy. So when I got drafted here, I was like, hey, I'm going to just keep being me, and that's kind of what I've always brought to the table.
Hey, talk to us a little bit about that center guard rotation as far as starting camp at center and having those responsibilities and then moving over to guard. You know, how'd that shake out, and just what your thoughts are playing guard versus center, where you landed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was great for me to get in the center action. Obviously, in college, you know, played all my time at guard. Did a little bit center. I was kind of always the emergency guy, just in case anything happened. But I think getting here and, you know, being thrown in that center with a lot of vets around you and you having to make the calls and, you know, get everybody on the right page was great for me just because it slowed the game down for when I went back to guard. So I think just having that in my toolbox to be able to, like, hey, if there are injuries, I mean, that's a game of football we play. There's going to be injuries. So I can go over there. I can do this. I can do that. So it makes me a better football player and makes me see the game through kind of what the center has to do, which slows the game down at guard. So it was great for me.
Hey, big focus on the run game this year for the Houston Texans. I mean, that's the big change from previous years is we've got to run the football. We want to be a run the ball first team. You know, what is that messaging like where it all starts in the offensive line room?
Yeah, I mean, it always starts for both, you know, both sides of the ball always starts up front. So I think for us getting the run game going is just, hey, starting with the mic, getting everybody on the same page, getting everybody comboed up, and then, you know, just going out there with a certain kind of attitude. I think when you run the game, it's technique and stuff, but it's like, hey, you got to move somebody from point A to point B, and that's kind of what we want to do, and that's what we want to establish. So it'd be good to get out there Sunday and kind of go do that.
Our listeners here are huge, obviously huge fans of this Texans team. They live and die, and it's no secret, and I think you know this, that the struggles over the last several years have been the offensive line. That's been a question every single year, and they have done a lot of different things to try to help this thing out. To our listeners, you're in the building every day. You're with these guys every day. Why should there be a belief that it will be different this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the way the O-line room's wired now, I can't speak from, you know, past experiences. Obviously, I wasn't here, but since I've been here, I mean, we got the right kind of guys in the building. We got guys that love ball. Guys that kind of play with a certain kind of swagger, go out there and finish blocks. And I think we're building that. And obviously we've got a long ways to go. There's always room to improve, but I think we've got the right kind of guys. And you got dudes that are wired the right way. Stuff usually tends to figure its way out. So that's why you should be excited for it.
What's your favorite part of game day? I mean, the camaraderie is what everybody that played misses, obviously, when it's over. But your favorite part of game weekend, I know we're at home this weekend, we're not traveling, but just big picture, Keelan Rutledge, favorite part of leading up to a game once all the hay is in the barn?
Yeah, I mean, just the excitement. You get to go out there and do it with your guys, like you said. I mean, we put a lot of work in this all camp, having us five guys in particular kind of being on the same page, and obviously this whole offense. So getting to get out there and, you know, get some stuff going, see the offense succeed, see your brother beside you succeed. I mean, that's what you hope for, that's what you work for. And obviously, you know, as an O-lineman, you know, you want to go out there and punch somebody in the face and establish a run and set the tone. So I think those are things you really look forward to, and you're kind of giddy up, and just the opportunity, obviously, to play in the NFL. I mean, it's second to none, so super grateful for that, and it gets you excited, gets you goosebumps every time you think about it.
Yeah, when you say that, I feel like you really want to punch somebody in the face. You might actually throw a punch in somebody's face coming up this weekend, man. We appreciate you stopping by and joining us, man. And good luck coming up on Sunday, as everybody here will be rooting for you guys.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all having me on.
All right, there he is. That is Keelan Rutledge, Black Barber all the way. I didn't know.
I knew what you was trying to get out.
I just wanted to know he was cutting his hair.
Not all whites look the same.
There are some white guys that can pull it off. Seen Barbershop. The white guy in there. He was the best cut in the whole house.
Yeah, I mean, look, you got. I mean, don't leave the Hispanic community out.
Yeah, you know. I mean, yeah, that's you're right.
They may be the tightest fades in the Houston area now. So yeah, I think you're pretty safe around here. You're pretty safe.
Well, I know that wasn't great clips.
No, you were right there. But I knew when you started this, you know, where you were going. Let me get this out of the way. Let me be the guy to do it.
Like, that wasn't great clips for you.
Nah, it wasn't miracle cuts or whatever used to be around.
That's right. You are indeed in the loop here on 95.7 The Fan. John Lopez, Reginald Atitula, Figgy Fig, and you rolling with us. Don't forget, in the 1 o'clock hour, here in about an hour, we will go behind enemy lines, talk to the Bills reporter for our sister station up in Buffalo, WGR 550. His name is Sal Capaccio. He's very good. In fact,
I had that for dinner last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
I don't think you did, but very good.
Capaccio.
I don't even think that's what you're thinking it is. I really and truly don't. But Sal, I believe, is the Buffalo Broadcasters Association Sports Person of the Year, something like that. So I know that he's good at that. He's definitely good at covering the Bills. So we'll get his insight for what's happening with this Bills team that's coming into town on Sunday. But from a larger perspective, we have a decent amount of an understanding of what the Bills are. At least it feels like that, because haven't the Texans played the Bills about the last 7 years in a row?
Seems like it. I don't know if it's seven, but it is one of the more unique things about this team. There are certain teams and players. Figgy was talking about T.Y. Hilton earlier that kind of have the Texans number. Texans have the Bills number.
Right. And so that's been the general consensus in the way that we've talked about things. And I understand why. I vividly remember having this conversation before week 12 last year and going, I don't know that that can just be the thing where it's just, it doesn't feel logical to just go, well, they have his number. And then they whooped his ass last year, him being Josh Allen and the entire team. But the question I'm asking myself is, again, I find myself in that place where I go, can we just go, they have their number? That feels anti-intellectual almost to just go, well, they just have some mysticism over them. And I know some of this is the place and some of this is the environment and some of this is just the dogged nature of the defense. But the question I think needs to be asked, how useful will last year's week 12 game and matchup versus the Bills be in talking about predicting, determining the outcome for this game, John?
I think it absolutely will be useful. I mean, I think, you know, D'Amico's been asked about it. He spoke yesterday about it. We might hear some of that later in the show. Clearly, you know, Will Anderson was asked about it. Once you, and it's human nature, man. We tend to think about these players that we see on TV or at the stadium kind of like robots. They're not real. No, they're real, man. They have real feelings, and it gets in their heads collectively. It gets in their heads individually. The Bills are angry about this, but they're also feeling like, what is it about this team? You know, why is it that this team has our number? And despite all that, it was a really close game at the end that the Bills clearly could have won. They still had a chance, but they didn't. And they're 0-4. Josh Allen is 0-4 in Reliant Stadium. So it's something, and it's in their heads collectively. So you absolutely can get a lot of out of it. And what I'm looking at is, you know, the pass rush. You know, the pass rush is just, it's undeniable. Doesn't matter who they put out there. Doesn't matter that Joe Brady is there. Doesn't matter, you know, new offense, new schemes, new adjustments and all that. You still got to deal with those two dudes, and that's what's in their head.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thing to say. That will absolutely still translate. Will Anderson Jr., Danielle Hunter, plus, you know, the other pass rushers, your interior guys, right? All of them are still going to be very good at getting upfield, getting after the quarterback. They're only going to get stronger in the system that they have and the nuances they have in it. It's particularly because of the way that the system works. It is very much one that allows them to play fast and play with the experience that they have. And now they have yet another year of that. And I think that that's only helped by the fact that you look over at the Bills and their offensive line is largely the same, except they have a new left guard. And I don't even know, it's not a new left guard upgrade per se. And so when it comes to the actual protection of this, I don't think that's going to be that, oh, wow, they got better on the offensive line, at least talent-wise, so they'll be able to protect it up. Plus, you look at their, maybe you could say that I'm pretty sure that their offensive line coach retired this offseason. I'll have to double-check on that. But at the very least, the larger structure of what they're doing offensively remains the same as well. So I don't know that is the difference. But there's big changes elsewhere in this game that it makes me ask this question on whether Week 12 will be impactful or on this game. And one of those is, Hello, DJ Moore. And it's not just DJ Moore himself. Because if I was just going DJ Moore's here and the entire landscape changes, I think that people would laugh at me. DJ Moore's a good receiver, don't get me wrong. But I don't think he's one of those guys that you look at as a top five, maybe not top 10 receiver that changes games. But the reason why I bring up DJ Moore is, do you remember what one of the issues with the Bills at large was? Whether it was last year, maybe the year before as well, and some of the things that we talked about, and the reason why they went and got DJ Moore?
What's that?
They just didn't have enough in the wide receiving corps, particularly when it came to the moments where you need someone to beat man-to-man coverage. Mm-hmm. The moments where you just, your guy, my guy, my guy's going to win. They didn't have enough of that. Even 2 years ago, I remember Khalil Shakir didn't even play. Mm-hmm. So they had nothing. Last year, Khalil Shakir played, and he got his. Yeah, I think he had 100 yards.
Yeah.
But even still, that was not enough. Now they have two of those. Plus, don't forget, Dalton Kincaid is playing in this game where he didn't last year. Mm-hmm. And so that is a huge difference where you go, you know, Josh Allen was back there running for his life, in part because I don't know that I could just throw it up in 50-50 circumstances, you know, when Sting is locking someone down, when Kamari's locking something down. I think that he might feel more comfortable throwing it up when there's Dalton Kincaid, there's DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir playing, where there's more targets where you go, I can feel comfortable about them in man coverage to maybe be man beaters and throw it up there. And I think that could change the dynamic of that defense-offense matchup.
No, I think you're right. And I think that was their charge in the offseason, is to try to get those types of players. I also think the Bills, and specifically Joe Brady, they're not going to play into the Texans' hands in terms of run the ball a lot with James Cook, be a little safer because the defense is so good, get rid of the ball quicker because of those defensive ends. I fully expect them to come in guns a-blazing because of that, because they have a quarterback. You know, why do you want to limit what he can do when he's so good? Even though they've had Josh Allen's number, now he's got more weapons. If they play into the Texans' hands, that's a wrap. You know, if they try to run the ball and be a little safer, get the ball out quicker. Now, they might try to get some quick routes going, but they're not going to be, you know, tepid about this at all.
Okay. Another thing that I think makes me ask the question of how impactful will Week 12 be for this game is the other side of this matchup, the Texans offense versus the Bills defense, is so very different. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't the strength-on-strength portion of this, right? The strength-on-strength is Bills offense, Texans defense.
Right.
And I think we already talked about some of the changes that happened there. The changes that happened here is just an entirely different defensive philosophy, mm-hmm. if not different dudes, although Ed Oliver plays in this game as opposed to not playing like he did in Week 12. Mm-hmm. But then the Texans have changed the way that they're going about offense as well. And I'm curious to see which wins out there, because the Texans are going to try and run the football more, especially with the multiple tight end sets. And I'll be very intrigued to see how that matches up with the Jim Leonard coach defense, mm-hmm. where they're going to have the five down front, but also the style of play that they have is different than what McDermott had, where they're maybe even similar to the Texans. They're going to be more aggressive. They're going to fire off the ball a little bit more. And I wonder how that impacts their ability to stop the run. Because last year, the Bills were not good at stopping the run.
No, they weren't. And it's funny that you mentioned that. It's got me thinking a little bit, because I think what the Bills are going to do is they're going to be unafraid, as I mentioned. I think they're going to try to really use Josh Allen the way you should use Josh Allen, and, you know, take some sacks. You know, it's going to happen. Take some hits, but because they have those weapons, they're going to attack. But you got me thinking that the defensive side might be the difference in the game against this Texans offense. How they're going to try to confuse. They know what's coming, you know, stylistically from the Texans. So they're going to have an ability to maybe really try to, you know, obviously focus on the run and take their chances. But then, you know, you have Nico out there.
Yeah, you have Nico. And then this year, I think you might have more opportunities at explosive plays, too, because you have Nico, you bring in Kayshon Boutte, and I'm intrigued to see exactly what that looks like in the first time that we get to see it fully together. But he is a big play receiver, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jalen Knoll and the way that he's come along is going to be interesting. Like, we heard CJ Stroud yesterday, and I was very intrigued. I don't know if you were, when I hear CJ say, you know, the development that Noel shows is he's gotten much better in the intermediate and in the short as well, which sounds more like a fully well-rounded receiver. And I'll be intrigued to see them actually take advantage of him. And the reason why I bring him up is Nico. Boutte, at least, is a big, deep player receiver. Knoll, who can maybe get to various different portions of the field and use his athleticism, plus more opportunities to actually get busy from the tight end spot. And I think that you look at a defense that now has to consider more than just what's Nico Collins doing, and probably actually will a defense that is going to have to actually try and work a little bit more to get pressure on C.J. Stroud, which was a little bit easier to do last year.
Yeah, look, I think the tight end thing that you're talking about is going to end up being, you know, pretty large. And we haven't even talked about this a whole lot because of what the Texans know about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I mean, that's a big factor here, you know, in what the Texans are going to do defensively. I think they're going to try to use C.J. Gardner-Johnson against them.
Is that a smart thing? Is it a smart thing if you take an offensive approach where you go, I want to pick on that particular dude? Because I think that sometimes you can do that and you go, all right, I found a weak spot. Or sometimes you can almost take yourself out of your game trying to do something particular.
But I think picking on him is not necessarily always directly.
Uh-huh.
It's baiting him into coming up and trying to, you know, take somebody's head off, or, you know, having him fall out of position with maybe a double route, a high-low route. And he's trying to come up and cover one guy, and there's Nico or whomever, you know, deep behind him. I think they're just going to use his aggressiveness and his penchant for playing out of position against him. It's not necessarily attacking him per se.
And I think
if that's the weakness, though, that's the Patriots' way, ain't it? Because the Patriots usually find your weakness and attack that weakness.
Yes, I think they're gonna really try to use C.J. Gardner-Johnson
If that's the weakness, I can see them attacking.
And here's the other thing. You know he's going to try it. I mean, he's tried to really temper his comments, and it hasn't been very successful. He's going to come in here and try to really make big plays. Use it. I think they're going to use it.
Yeah, we'll see if he actually matured this time around. Yeah. And I mean, in his game. But it might also help facilitate this, that Jim Leonard wants his guys to be aggressive. So maybe that allows C.J. Gardner-Johnson to be a little bit more erratic at times, and maybe he could take advantage of that. The other thing that seems like it possibly could be a weakness, at least it was last year, they were not good at stopping the run, this defense. Are they actually better at it? Because we can't say definitively that it is, even though just because Jim Leonard's coming in and the defensive style that it seems like he would play tends towards that. Maybe the Texans are just able to run the football in a way that we had not anticipated, and boom, here you go. That's enough, right?
They're facing a better run defense this year, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I really do think so, but we'll
ultimately see. I mean, Ed Oliver alone and Walker and – yeah, I think they're going to be facing a better run defense. That's really going to be focused on the Texans running.
I also think that they're going to get out here and base defense a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I know that everybody's kind of nickel-based. I think D'Amico was talking about that yesterday, but I think the Texans – if they get out here using 12 personnel as much as it feels like they will, it seems like compared to where last year the Bills played a lot of nickel in those circumstances, I think that Jim Leonard, at least I was looking at some stats that pointed to Jim Leonard in his time where he was with Denver, and he was an assistant. He wasn't the actual coordinator. But in his time in Denver, they usually put an extra linebacker on the field in those circumstances. And so if they put that extra linebacker on the field, are you able to take advantage of that in the pass game, or are you even able to just like block it up and go and beat that? I don't know. These are all things that are up in the air, and I'm excited to see. But you mentioned C.J. Gardner-Johnson and him trying to mature. I want you to hear a little bit of the audio.
It's a losing battle.
I feel a little bit bad for him, just a little bit, very, very small bit, because the media contingent is going to get out here and ask because they know you the quote man. I'm coming to get a quote. You the quote man, right? And so this was C.J. Gardner-Johnson handling media. I want to say, was this yesterday? Handling media as it pertains to playing against one of his many former teams in the Texans.
Question one, just focus on being a Bill. But then when you focus on the other, you give them bulletin board material, I guess. I'm not really worried about them. They're not worried about me. Yeah, they got their team, we got our team. We focus on winning the game. They focus on winning the game. But I'm all focused on being a great Buffalo Bill for Sunday and not really tuning into the extracurricular.
I'm sorry. How excited are you to get out there? Didn't have as much preseason action.
I'm a vet. I got enough games under my belt to, you know, go out there and do what I need to do. But to answer your question, how do I get prepared for a season like this? It ties in with this one. It's just basically just stay within your team. Stay in the building. Stay working out. Trust the coaches and trust the process, because everybody waiting for what CeeDee do, because I ain't seen any preseason. But it's like, why are you surprised on what I do? If I go out and ball, it's going to be the same that you've seen in previous spots. So it's like, my motto this year is to focus on being a great person, a player in that Bills jersey. All the other stuff don't really matter right now.
What did you learn about C.J. Stroud last year, playing with him a little bit, and what you see from him on film?
Next question.
Ouch. Even the earlier stuff, you know, you're just like, do you? Are you? Are you really focusing on being a Bill?
I think he's trying hard. I think this is
him. It's a losing battle.
Now, talk to me in like week 6.
Yeah.
I think that this could happen again because it has happened a lot with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Yeah. I think that was actually him trying.
Oh, he was trying.
Including that
last
part.
There's no question about that.
I think the last part was really, you're not going to get me to do this and say something about that dude. Except it comes off as, I don't rate him. I don't regard him. So we're still in the same place.
I don't want to give him bulletin board material. You don't have to. And you kind of are anyway. You know, when you say no, next question or whatever.
That's just the way he is.
Yes, it is.
That is just the way he is.
Yeah.
So, all right. So I come back to the larger question. How, you know, we've talked about some of the places where there's differences, there's changes. And so with that being the case, how much do you think that week 12, seeing the way that ultimately it was still a close game, don't get me wrong, but seeing the way that at least the defense was able to really get after this offense, those things are largely unchanged. Mm-hmm. But then the offense and for the Texans seemingly and hopefully has taken a step forward. How insightful do you view last year's matchup versus the Bills for this one that's coming up on Sunday?
I think it's two answers. I think for the Texans defensively, it doesn't make a world of difference. They're still going to come at you. They're still going to be able to get to Josh Allen. I mean, even as mobile as he is and everything, they're just good. I think on the other side of the ball, offensively, I think there's some mysteries out there. You know, how they're going to be able to approach the Texans' run game, what they're going to do, how much they're going to use the tight end, how are they going to exploit C.J. Gardner-Johnson, whether it's with a tight end, you know, that he's going to try to come up on. It's two different stories here, man.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah. And I did try and bring up, I'm curious to see also how the Bills offense comes out, because I think that there's more weapons, which in theory, there's a better opportunity to go and win one-on-one. I'd still take the Texans guys versus the Bills guys, right? I'd still take Kamari Lassiter and Jarek Stingley having a guard, Khalil Shakir and DJ Moore, probably not in that order, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
I would still take that. However, I think that creates more opportunities to maybe make some of those plays. And ultimately, if there is a change there, a little bit swinging towards the Bills, that means even more that I need whatever the matchup is between the Bills defense and the Texans offense, I need it to swing a lot more towards the Texans offense for me to be really comfortable with what's happening Sunday. But still, I'm very curious to see how this game falls in with the run of games that we've had between the Bills and the Texans, where the Texans have come out the victor more often than not.
Yes.
All Absolutely. Right. Somebody said, dude's a clown. He's been on 8 teams in 7 years. Clown. Hey, man, we'll see if that shows up on the field on Sunday. Of course, you'll be able to hear that right here on your home of the Houston Texans, 95.7 The Fan.
All right, let's get right to it. Our NFL Insider Call, our first one of the season, as we welcome you back into Payne and Pendergast here on 95.7 The Fan. Our NFL Insider Call, our insider is Ross Tucker, as always, and he is presented by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. On your side. No. Play it again.
Nationwide. Thank you. Is on your side.
All right, there we go. All right, Ross Tucker joining us. Hey, Ross, how you doing, man? Ross?
He was upset that we didn't play the Nationwide
job properly. Yeah, Ross,
are you there? Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We are back.
Okay.
We're officially back. Very anticlimactic. I had my cell phone on mute so that I didn't interrupt you during the Nationwide thing.
That's okay. We're off to a rip-roaring say.
Is it COVID? Are we on a Zoom call here? Do we have to explain to you the way this technology works? All right. He's on mute again.
Ross, are you on mute again?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Okay, cool. Hey, Ross, look, before we get into the Bills and the Texans, I'll say the same thing to you that we said to J.J. Watt when we had him on a few weeks ago on the launch of the new station, which is, I know it's strange circumstances that brought about this shuffling at CBS that moved him in with Jim Nantz and moved you in with Ian Eagle, but I'm thrilled for you and really happy for you. I know Seth is as well. I know our audience is. So congratulations on the teaming up with Ian Eagle, and we look forward to the debut of this pairing with Bills Texans on Sunday.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that. To say I'm excited would be the understatement of the century. You know, fortunately, I think I've done over 20 games on Westwood One Radio with Ian, and so he is so fun to work with. I legitimately think he's one of the best to ever do it. I don't think that's hyperbole. So having done so many games on the radio, I have a pretty good idea how it's going to go. And so I'm just excited that more and more people are going to get a chance to hear what that sounds like, because he's hilarious. My only concern is that, like, He's so up to date on like pop culture and reality TV. I only watch football. That's the only thing I watch. So I'm a little worried he might make references that I don't get, but that's okay. And honestly, like in my mind, I think we got the best game. I mean, I've seen what some of the other games are, and there's some other good games, but I did my power rankings this morning on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. I have both of these teams in my top five. Bills, Texans, two teams that, everybody kind of has high expectations. It just feels different in Houston and Buffalo. I don't know what the right phrase is, but I think maybe it's not like a now or never. It's more like it's time. It's time to take the next step. And for the Texans, obviously they want the Super Bowl, but at least getting past the divisional round. And for the Bills, obviously they want to win the Super Bowl, but at least getting to it. I think both these fan bases are just so hungry for their team to get over the proverbial hump and take some positive forward step in the right direction.
And Ross, I figured you especially would be excited about this matchup when it comes to the Houston side of things, just because as a former offensive lineman yourself, all the discussion this offseason has been about, can the Texans actually get themselves a good rushing attack? And a lot of that starts with being more physical on the offensive line, particularly the interior offensive line. You were on the call last year when Jeffrey Simmons was unblocked for a sack in about 0.37 seconds. So looking at this Texans offense and what they've done with David Montgomery and the offensive line itself, how optimistic should we be that the rushing attack could at least be, at the very least, a viable rushing attack this year?
Well, and that, I think that's the key word. For a lot of these teams, they're not going to be a top five rushing team, and they don't need to be. You just can't be bottom five. You just can't have it be like a huge liability. So I'll give you a few things about the Texans rushing attack that I really like. Number one, I think everyone would agree we would expect David Montgomery to be an upgrade at running back over, what they had last year. I know Woody Marks is still there, but certainly Nick Chubb, at the end of his career. So that's one. Number two, I think, and this is big, guys, really big, because I played in the same offense that Nick Caley uses. He uses primarily the Patriots offense. Mm-hmm. And I played in that in New England 2005-2006. With Brady and Josh McDaniels and the whole deal, a lot of the running game is the quarterback helping you get into the right play and identify what the right play is. And I just think in year two, CJ Stroud is going to be more comfortable doing those things. And then last, but certainly not least, they made a concerted effort. They always talk about swarm, and I'm obsessed with the Texans defense and the physicality with which they play. If you look at the guys that they brought in, Montgomery as a running back, drafting Rutledge in the first round, even I know they might not play in this game or at all, whatever, but like guys like Wyatt Teller and the way he has gotten after people in his career, Foster Moreau, it just feels like they're trying to bring more swarm-type mentality and personalities to the offensive side of the ball. And I think that counts. I think that matters. So I think there's three clear things that you would think would help them improve their run game.
We're talking to Ross Tucker. He is our Odyssey NFL Insider nationwide. So much more than a great insurance company. They're one of America's largest financial services company, too.
Nationwide is on your side.
He is brought to you by Nationwide. So, Ross, on the defensive side of the football, I'm glad we're talking to you before this game, not just because you're on the call, but one of the few changes that the Texans made on the defensive side was bringing in Reed Blankenship from the Eagles. And we know you do a lot of stuff with the Eagles. You call their games in the preseason. You live in that part of the country. That was a rotating, revolving door, that safety position. It was one of the few weak spots on the defense for the Texans last year. What do you expect the effect of Reed Blankenship to be for what is already obviously a very, very good defense?
Well, a couple things. Number one is it might have been like the only weak spot on the defense. I mean, they're good everywhere else. And so Reed is a favorite of mine, undrafted rookie free agent from Middle Tennessee State, ends up starting some games as a rookie on an Eagles team that went to the Super Bowl. I mean, super impressive, very, very reliable, very, very smart. And I know sometimes like people driving to work right now, like, okay, great, dude, reliable, smart, thank you. Like, we got Will Anderson, we got Danielle Hunter, we got Kalen Bullock, we got, like, I get that. This might sound a little counterintuitive, but when you have all those other superstar talents, sometimes you need a guy that you can just count on to always be the security blanket, always make sure everybody's where they're supposed to be, and give Bullock the freedom to maybe take some more chances. I think that's some of the things that Blankenship will bring to the table. Because if you look, and I saw a quote from Matt Burke, and I haven't talked to him yet this week, I'm looking forward to it, but I saw a quote from Matt Burke. I think he said that they might have only given up one touchdown all year on a drive that didn't include an explosive pass. Mm-hmm. They were middle. They were like top five in almost every category, middle of the pack in terms of giving up explosive passes. So that's either a miscommunication, or, you know, maybe they're not doing a good enough job disguising things and people had a beat on what they're doing. Well, let me just tell you, a lot less likely to have a miscommunication with Reed Blankenship on the back end. And also, a guy like Reed might give you the freedom and the ability to disguise things a little bit more than perhaps what they've done to this point. Maybe that's the next evolution of this defense.
Yeah, that's, and that you hit the nail on the head there, Ross. That's what they've been talking about since OTAs, is the communication side of things and eliminating and limiting those big plays. And a lot of it did exactly like you would have suspected, D'Amico said, a lot of those are just miscommunications. And that's a big part of Reed Blankenship being in there. I'm curious, again, from your offensive lineman's perspective, last year in this game, the Bills' game plan offensively was to leave their injured offensive tackles alone on an island against Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. And it was one of the weirdest and dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. Josh Allen gets sacked 9 times. It was bad. This year, they have more speed. DJ Moore's out there. The Dalton Kincaid is going to play in this game, which he didn't last year. Could Joe Brady, could he actually try this again? Do you think he might try the same strategy of just leaving his tackles on an island, thinking, okay, well, yeah, but this year Josh Allen has some speed, so he can get rid of the ball quickly?
This reminds me of, like, Jason Bateman and Dodgeball.
Like, yeah.
They'll never be. We gave up 8 sacks and Josh Allen got killed. They'll never be expecting us to do it again. it's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off. No, I would be, as an offensive lineman, I have borderline PTSD watching that video. I watched that Week 12 game. I have no idea why the Bills, that was their strategy. It did not work at all. I think they proved that they can't block those guys one-on-one, and I would be very surprised if they did that again. Very surprised. What I will say is interesting about the Bills is it's kind of counterintuitive when you think of Josh Allen, but they don't actually throw the ball down the field that much. Mm-hmm. You know, they have the shortest depth of target in the NFL, which is just how many yards the quarterback throws the ball in the air, which is weird when you have a guy like Josh Allen, who's the modern-day John Elway. And that's why I think the Texans have had so much success against them. You know, the Texans, we just established, to beat the Texans, you need explosive passes, and the Bills really haven't gotten explosive passes against the Texans.
That's Ross Tucker. He is our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls presented by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs.
Nationwide is on your side.
Ross, we'll see you on Sunday. Are you excited for the press box food at Reliance Stadium this weekend? We know that that's a big part of your ethos is the tuck spreads. Where does the Houston one rank on your lists?
Wait, haven't we talked about this? Not only after that Titans game last year,
I waited
the rest of the season, and nobody was able to beat them out. They were number one. Number one.
Yes.
I mean, it's the options. It's that little ice cream machine thing they have.
Oh, yeah.
It's the dessert rotunda. So I'm a huge chocolate-covered pretzel guy, and the dessert rotunda that has, like, those voodoo donuts and then the chocolate-covered pretzels is amazing. But I thought I told you guys this. I did the Steelers playoff game on the sideline for Westwood One, like one of two sideline games I do every year, radio in the playoffs. I went right up to Cal and Hannah McNair. I never met him before in my life, and I just wanted to congratulate you guys on being number one on my press box food rankings.
did Hannah cry?
The season that they had.
Yeah.
They were happy. No, they had big smiles.
Oh, yeah, tears of joy, I meant. Yeah.
It matters. I mean, listen, the NFL, they know. This is like a big deal. So we'll see. Listen, you know, in life, first impressions are big. It's like I tell my daughters, don't start off the year with a bunch of bad grades. It's hard to get them back up. Start with really good grades. So if the Texans bring it on Sunday, they might just run the table. I mean, maybe nobody else can even overtake them all year. They have an excellent opportunity.
That would be good to go wire to wire in the press box buffet category. Hey, Ross, we know you got to get out of here. We look forward to this hit with you each and every Tuesday, man. And we look forward to seeing you here in Houston this weekend.
Yeah, can't wait to see you guys. Thank you.
Same here. That's Ross Tucker joining us here on 95.7 The Fan. His first hit with us on FM radio, Seth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
crystal
clear about that.
FM radio,
You know, that as he was talking about the Bills and their offense not being that explosive downfield, I think that's what Bills fans have been saying forever, and that hence the addition of DJ Moore. And that's the big X factor in this is, all right, what is DJ Moore? You know, we haven't seen a super, super productive DJ Moore since he was with Joe Brady back in Carolina. But he's also been kind of in a weird situation in Chicago. So that right there, where the Bills have been this kind of dink and dunk, Josh Allen, get rid of the ball quickly, get run after the catch, it balanced out with James Cook. It's probably going to look like a different offense this year if they can be really effective with DJ Moore.
Yeah.
And that's where the tough thing for the Texans is, man, like Ross said, that the previous Bills game plan plays perfectly into what the Texans do. Keep everything in front of you, come up and be super aggressive at the catch point, hit receivers over the middle, make the tackle, limit yard after the game or yards after the catch. That's going to be tested a little bit more this year. But it also might mean more time in the pocket for Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter to rush Josh Allen.
Yep.
So it's like this, as it has been, it's that pass rush with that crowd noise going against a quarterback who's had some of his worst career games versus the Texans defense in Houston.
It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun. Okay, Texter, I prefer Ross on AM. Good news. You can listen to him on AM if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, Mr. Vinyl Record Guy.
It's simulcast over there. If you like the, if you're into the static and the dropouts and things like that, we still got you covered over at 610 The Fan. Text message. Always like Ross Tucker and really appreciate how he clearly knows what's going on with the Texans. That's what I'll say about Ross. This is not like him knowing what's going on with the Texans, you bringing up specifics about the run game in the offensive line and things like that, and him giving detailed answers in return. This isn't just because he's doing the game on Sunday. Like,
yeah.
Ross is one of those guys that watches all 32 teams.
Well, no, and the Ross Tucker Football Podcast is awesome because he has really I told him he's employing the dumb jock strategy to a T. When you have a group project, you sidle up to the smartest kids and let them do all the work.
Yes.
And he does that with, like, Greg Cassell and other people. So he gets some really, really, really smart people on his podcast. So he's very well informed.
Yeah, boy, I just don't believe Tyler, did you really text that to him?
I really did, but it was relevant that day to a conversation they were having where they mentioned Kraken. I didn't just like randomly like, "Hey, what up, Kraken?"
I don't know if that's what you. I didn't know that's how you. If that's what you said, what's up to you guys? Maybe you and Clint, you text Clint that or Blaine or somebody.
It's not my go-to usually.
Not your go-to.
No, I'm more likely to be like, "What up, Turbo?" or "Chief" or "Big Guy."
Not Turbo. Yeah, I just hadn't heard. I didn't know that was your normal.
I don't like the fact that you put Chief in the middle of Turbo and Big Guy.
Oh, I didn't mean anything personal by that.
I'm just telling you.
My bad. I didn't mean anything personal by that. I like the way you say Chief.
I'm going to be honest.
Like, I'm a kickapoo.
Turbo's the first one for me. I don't think I've heard that. I don't think I've heard.
Oh, immediate disrespect.
Yeah, I don't, that's what.
What's
it
up,
is.
Turbo?
Yeah, immediate. Like you're being a smart mouth and you're trying to get under my skin. If that's okay. if you're calling right. me Turbo,
it's just what's like up, Big Guy,
kind of like my Playboy.
Yes, that one too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Bub.
Yeah, Bub.
Bub, not so much.
Yeah. That, yeah, I feel like that's dual.
All right, just silly goose.
All right. Well, if you're ready for more Tylerisms, Tyler's turtle is coming up here in. In just a bit, but we just heard from the offensive coordinator, and I know for you, you like Nick Caley is somebody that you jump out to really kind of hear to try to get in the mind of maybe what we're going to look at for the overall with this offense. He said a lot of things there, talked about a lot of different things from the offensive line to CJ to Kayshon Boutte. What jumped out to you heading into this game?
Well, I think the big piece is, and I'm tired of hearing about it, to be honest with you, but it's real, is how much he talks about communication and how much he's asked about communication. Shout out to the media members that are there that are asking the follow-up questions because they're really good follow-up questions, trying to dig and get what exactly he means. I'm exhausted with the communication stuff. Like at some point around here offensively, we got to get beyond that.
Well, hopefully we see them in the game coming up and we see them at the start of the season and that's not a talking point of them or us being able to see it when we talk about it.
The more it sticks around, the more you realize it's just it may be a personnel problem and not a execution or process problem. You know, maybe there's somebody involved that can't communicate. And so that could be a major problem, but I think he talked about it three, maybe four times throughout that lengthy press conference there. So yeah, I think that's the piece that, boy, I hope game one, we get beyond that and the communication's great. We're not talking about getting out of the huddle and, you know, the more they talk about last year, now that we're not in the middle of last year, the more, it's crazy to think how long it's taken them just to have some urgency getting in and out of the huddle and have some urgency identifying the mic. And the fact that was such a problem last year, I know it was year one, but you see a lot of year one guys that can at least get in and out of the huddle. So it's crazy how the things they struggled with last year, but hopefully again this year it's off they don't struggle with it and we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. You can jump in on this, please, as well. The game is Sunday, right? We're up against it. A couple more sleeps until the first game of the year.
Yes!
Do you feel better? Honestly, do you feel better about, I don't know if Tyler is shaking it off as a no before I get it out. But maybe he was shaking something else off. Do you feel better about Nick Caley and the architect of the offense going into this game now? Are you like everything that has occurred? Because as it ended, again, a lot of people felt a certain way about him at the end of the season. Now we've gone through OTAs and mandatory minicamp and training camp and preseason games. Are you at a place where you're feeling better about Nick Caley going into this game?
No, I'm unmoved.
You're still waiting. You're still about. I got to see.
Yeah, I'm unmoved. I mean, I don't. Nick Caley can talk the game. Nick Caley can put a playbook together. I mean, he's been around some great offenses, some great offensive minds. I don't in any way, shape, or form concern myself with that. It's the. You know, can you coach a quarterback your system and have him know it like the back of his hand and execute it on the field. You know, in the moment, can you know when to call what plays and how to take advantage of what matchups, and can you truly wrap your offense around your players and their strengths, kind of deal? To me, those are the concerns, and we won't know any of that until we see rubber meets the road and they're actually playing games.
Yeah. I do think they've had a good offseason and a good camp, but it is always in the back of your mind of, all right, let's see when teams are actually trying to game plan and stop them.
Yeah.
What that looks like and how they adjust to it. Because, again, it has felt good. I do feel like in some spots the personnel is improved, especially up front in the offensive line. The tight end room is not depleted like it was to start the season, and so maybe they are able to do more of the things that they wanted to do. But it does feel like, everything I'm seeing in training camp could be something, but I got to see it on the field. I've got to see what it looks like when you adjust. I've got to see what it looks like for you to put together a game plan. And as you said, will we see CJ? Can you get us to see CJ at his best? Yep. Can you get us to see Nico at his best? Can you exploit mismatches? And I think that will come when we actually get to see them on the field against teams, and it starts against Buffalo.
Well, he just has it's such a group effort offensively. He obviously has nothing to do with the roster building, or the supporting cast, or the lack thereof, however you want to couch it. He's not the one that's saying, hey, I'm not going to build around my quarterback. It's not about one guy. That has nothing to do with him. So when you look at Nick Caley, the only way I think is fair to judge what he's doing is on game day and in that moment where, hey, bud, it's on you. You know, what do you have dialed up on this year in the red zone to fix some of those problems? You know, this run game that we have been beat over the head with, that we're going to be better running the football, how are you going to get that accomplished? And again, it'll be Sunday afternoon when we watch what Nick Caley's got planned.
Yeah, Sage on YouTube, Caley and the offense remain the biggest question marks until proven otherwise. Someone texted in, I just don't trust Nick Caley at all. I'm afraid we're going to lose Nico due to the offensive philosophy that Caserio is trying to impose on the team. Nico wants targets. I think the Texans won't be an appealing destination due to the offensive culture. I don't get that from Nico.
He just signed an extension, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't get. I mean, I think he, I think he is. I mean, we talked about it before during the offseason. I hope he kicks up a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't want him to go, reading or listening to audiobooks on the sideline. But I'd like for him to kick up a little bit. Like, hey, man, bring this ball over here. I don't care about no double teams moving me around.
That's right. You're in the loop here on 95.7 The Fan. Happy Wednesday to you. Don't forget, D'Amico Ryan, CJ Stroud will talk to the Assembly Media, and you'll hear that on these airwaves during the drive. You'll also hear Robert Flores jump on with the fellas 3:40 p.m. Those are a couple timestamps, or a few timestamps, for you to keep track of. Also, don't forget, this is the hour in which we will start what is going to be a weekly occurrence during the football season, Texas Star Grill Shop gift card giveaways. And don't forget, winning that gift card today and every Wednesday throughout the rest of the season will give you an opportunity to be entered for a chance to win a grill as well. So if you like grilling, Texas Star Grill Shop, a great place to go for any and all things that you need, whether it's the actual food you put on the grill or all the other accoutrement that John can tell you a lot more about than I can. Actually, Figgy too. Figgy out here grilling.
No, it's a badass grill. It's a real good one. It really is.
Yeah, y'all do a great job with all those. So
let me get one of them grills, man.
All right, we'll enter. No, you can't win.
Damn. Crazy
that happened. Let me get one of them grills then. Let's get back to my question.
Doesn't change my question.
So that's not what I didn't ask you about that at all. Yeah. So I was asking about something entirely different.
Yeah.
All right. Shout out to D'Amico Ryans, who, again, I mentioned you'll hear him talking to the Assembly Media, but you also hear him on the Coach's Show. On Texans radio on these airwaves. And the first coacher show of the I guess the football season as we head into week one. There's a few things that were interesting in it. One of them led to a question that I wanted to throw out to you, listener, you, Figgy, John. Do you think that the five fingers in a glove approach is enough for this offensive line this year? Because D'Amico Ryans was asked about what he's seen, and this is cut three here, Fig, what he has seen from the offensive line this year. And listen to not just what he says, but the tone and tenor that he takes in saying it.
Yeah, I see it. I see it very well, man, for our offensive line. Last year at this time, I was thinking back, we were still kind of shuffling guys, trying to figure it out, like who was going out there, our first five guys. Well, our five guys now, they've been working together for the past couple weeks.
Okay.
Right. So they have that continuity. They have that, hey, the guards and the tackles, those guys have been communicating with each other for the past couple weeks. So it's not fresh and new hitting week one. And okay. I think that'll lend us some, you know, some moments to really go through some little, I think, go through a transition a little bit easier when we do see a look that we may not have scouted. Right. Those guys have communicated. We can fall back on that. Like, hey, let's just go with it. Guys can communicate better. Guys will be on the details. So I think it'll help just having a consistent five guys out there. I'm excited to see how it looks. Like, the guy's done a really great job when it comes to protecting CJ all throughout training camp. When it comes to the run game, they've done a great job of working together. And that's what it's about. Those five guys working well together. I'm excited to see what this group can do. And this game, it's always going to come down to how you play up front.
Right.
Right. If we play well up front, we can run the ball well. Yeah. It's going to start with how they block. So I'm excited about this group. They've done a good job of gelling well together.
I do think there's a lot to that. And I know there's always going to be some questions. But if you just compare this year to last year, which we've been doing for a long time, hell, he said they were still trying to figure it out week one. They were still trying to figure it out week 11. You know, week 10. And so
last year you're talking about. Yeah.
I do think it matters. Ultimately, though, as much as it matters and it does make them better, we still have to see the level of play. You know, we have to be able to see, is Ingram, you know, going to be reverting to some, you know, average play. As much as we love, and I don't expect this to happen, but as much as we love, you know, Keelan Rutledge, still a rookie, still seeing some things that he has never seen before. Obviously, there are some big time questions in terms of durability at right tackle and really both spots, Trent Brown and Braden Smith. But I think what's ultimately going to happen, if they can keep these guys healthy in the front and keep them together, I think it will matter. I think it will make them better.
I tend to agree. Yeah. I was just very intrigued with some of the ways that he was describing it. Like, he got into talking about the communication, and I think that matters a great deal. I mean, if for no other reason, the thing that comes to mind for me is there was an occurrence that had happened a number of times last season and honestly in previous years with this offensive line that drove me up a wall, John Lopez. And do you know what that was?
What?
It was when a team decided to run a stunt where they had one guy loop around, and that dude almost had unfettered access to the backfield every time that happened, because these dudes, whoever it was, would get ear holed in one side of their helmet, and then the other guy was running that guy into that defender into his teammate, and then completely missing the fact that he needed to pick up this guy who was stunting around.
Yeah.
And that is a factor of communication and having that familiarity with the guys that you're blocking against. So I do think that those are the things, honestly, that I've been the most scared about when
but
it comes
they should
to this
be better.
Offensive line. They should be better. And that was kind of the approach that D'Amico had when talking about this. He was like, they've been communicating. There's going to be a level of consistency. And he said, we're going to reach some moments. And he kind of had that chuckle in there, which this one felt a lot more like a nervous chuckle to me. And now I am doing the thing where I am hyper-analyzing speech patterns, which can get you into trouble. Recognize that up front. D'Amico Ryans is a little bit of a chuckler just generally in the way that he talks. That one felt like a little bit more of a nervous chuckle to me, because he said, you know, where we could kind of just fall back on some things. And all of that felt like, it felt very much, we'll see. I'm with him that I definitely feel better about where it is than where it was. I am very curious to see if it is enough. With the improvement, or however much improvement they've actually made on the offensive line, because what is it, three dudes on this offensive line are same as the offensive line that you had at the end of the season last year?
Yeah.
It is just Evan Brown, who was a little bit more of a journeyman, and then Keelan Rutledge, who looks really good, don't get me wrong. Otherwise, this is a lot of a similar offensive line, and we are really depending on those upgrades there in the middle, and more importantly, a communication and a familiarity that hopefully will grow over time, and that hopefully you've established over, what, like 4 or 5 weeks leading into this, that will be enough to make this offensive line significantly better in the way that
they
operate.
Well, look, make no mistake. I as much as I just said, it should be better. It should make a difference. I mean, who's not in we'll see mode? I mean, is anybody not in we'll see mode with this? You know, I don't think anybody could say, oh, boy, they're going to be so much better. No, I think it should help that they're together for the last couple of weeks and hopefully, you know, into the season and the entirety of the season. But, no, I am not, like, betting on this offensive line to be great. We'll see. we'll see.
Yeah, and I appreciate that D'Amico Ryan's both, like, when we heard him talking about the offense yesterday and here, he's not giving a false sense of belief. He's like, what I've seen, they've looked pretty good, and we'll see how they go and operate.
Yeah.
But that does then bring me to a place where I go, is that enough? And I guess ultimately we will have to see to some degree. D'Amico Ryan's, as I mentioned, was on Texas radio, and one of the things he also talked about was the defensive front. And this also comes to the offensive line, because in week one versus the Bills, this is going to be a defensive front that's five down, right? It's a 3-4 defense, which means those outside linebackers are really your edge rushers, and they'll be up at the line along with your two edge defensive ends and your nose tackle. That creates the five-man front, which is similar to what you saw with the Panthers. And so in joint practice, so D'Amico was asked, how beneficial was seeing those different fronts in joint practice for you?
Yeah, the joint practice was very beneficial from that standpoint. Carolina runs the five down under front that we'll see Buffalo run. Well, if we put base out on the field, that'll be their base defense. Yep. They're going to try to make sure they stop the run. But it also, the five down front gives you a little variety, right? You can send five, you can drop an outside linebacker, right. you can really hide your pressures a little bit more with the five down spacing. I know that's what Jim wants to do. He wants to confuse the offense a little bit. So it definitely gives him that flexibility by using the five down front. But I thought our guys handled that really well in Carolina, being their first time going against it. And so we have some reps to go back and look at how we handle those pressures and the five down spacing. So I feel like our guys are comfortable with that from going against Carolina, and we needed that work against them heading into the week.
This make you as nervous as it does me, simply because, yes, you can, and I love joint practices, as I've talked about many times, and you can manipulate them and say, hey, can y'all run this? I want my offensive line to see this. Mm-hmm. You can do all that. Still a different world once you get into the real games, and when some of the things that they have noticed the Texans' tendencies already, because the offense hasn't changed, the offensive scheme. So they might know, hey, well, let's try this. These are the things that are going to be really intriguing to me on Sunday, when they start playing those games up front and some of the things that you just talked about.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm very intrigued. I'm hoping that this is where the benefit of an offensive lineman that's played more, a center, mind you, a dude who's playing center. Admittedly, he hasn't always played center. He's bounced around between center and guard. But a dude who has played more in the NFL compared to Jake Andrews, even when he was taking stepping in as the center for this team last year.
Yeah,
it's night and day how much more football Evan Brown has played. So how much of that familiarity on top of, hey, you've been given a little bit of a crash course in what this five down front is going to look like and what they're going to do. And then Trent Brown, who is, I imagine, an endless wealth of knowledge of football, that, and then a smart guard and Keelan Rutledge, who seems to pick things up quickly. And I hope that all those things help this offensive line. Once you get to those points with seeing the Panthers, and I imagine, as you mentioned, D'Amico Ryan's maybe going over to Dave Canales and be like, or not even actually, you have to go to Jiro Evero, the defensive coordinator of the Panthers, and go, hey, can you mess with this a little bit? Can you show us a little bit of this to give us an opportunity? Hopefully this is the type of offensive line that is smart enough and has congealed enough with enough time together where they can at least use that as enough of a jumping off point to get a firm enough foundation to where they don't look abysmal versus that defensive line, which has some really good guys on it. We talked about Deion Walker. That dude, I think his name is going to be very important in the middle of that defense. Nose tackles are going to be important this year, the early portion of this year, to test this offensive line, particularly the middle of it. Deion Walker is absolutely one of those. Ed Oliver, as well as a defensive end, is going to be, you know him and you know what he's capable of doing. I think that intrigues me to no end. But you heard him say Jim in there, and the Jim he's talking about is Jim Leonard, new defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. And he has been a fascination for me. I think you already can tell. I've been doing a lot of kind of researching and looking into him. And I imagine that the Texans have been doing exponentially more than I could to figure out, what does Jim Leonard do? What does he not do? What might he do? Because Last time he was actually a bona fide defense coordinator was in college. Then he was a part of the Denver Broncos defensive staff, but you wonder how much that is his. And I thought John Harris asked a really good question, is how do you keep from chasing ghosts? The ghost being, what are the possibilities of what could be done? How do you chase? Yeah. How do you keep yourself from doing that in week one, D'Amico?
Yeah, that chasing ghosts thing, that's for everyone, right? It's
right.
When you're
right.
Going out, you're seeking things and you're searching deep for things that you could happen,
right.
That may happen, but you have no idea. So that's why you call them ghosts.
Right.
And it's easy to fall victim to that because you have so much time to prepare for this first game. And you have a new team. When I say new, you have new coordinators, new mm-hmm. head coach, right? So he's going to implement things that he's probably done in other places. So you say don't chase ghosts, but I find myself chasing them, right?
Yeah.
I go back to, okay, Pete Carmichael has been there.
Right.
He's been a long time Sean Payton assistant. So you go back, you're watching some Denver film and things mm-hmm. how they attacked us. You go back with Jim Leonard. He's been with Denver. So you go back and that Vance Joseph
yep.
and that defensive philosophy. So you're watching that to see, okay, what could they possibly do? You go back to a lot of different things,
right?
But in that first game, like you really, I tell coaches this all the time, you really don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
So you can try to prepare as best as you can, but also don't want to cloudy players' minds
right.
with a ton of information yeah. that we think this could happen, that could happen. Well, they can do whatever.
Right.
Right. And so for me, you start to chase them. You do. That's what coaches do. You have extra time. You chase them. And you just try to see, okay, where have we been hurt in the past? How can we prepare our guys in that way to show them a few things, a few defensive looks for yep. offense that, hey, we got to be prepared for right. this type of pressure, this type of five down front defensively. Hey, you need to be prepared for these particular type of passes that have hurt us in the past. Man, you prepare that way, and then you just got to see on Sunday, hey,
right.
what happens, right? You have to trust, and all of our coaches, all our players, we have to just trust our preparation and
yep.
the things that we've done in training camp. And that's what we'll fall back on, that training. We prepared.
I love the candor. I love his honesty because I think coaches at the NFL level, college, you know, and the NFL level, they can't help themselves. They're just always, and he said it, you know, they're just always digging in and piddling and trying to see, okay, well, they did this, you know, last year in week three. And, you know, maybe they can do it. I don't think they can help themselves. You just get rid of all the clutter and keep it simple.
In a weird way, I think this is part of the growth of D'Amico Ryans as head coach.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's nothing to say that he did not already have some of this as an idea in his coaching philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that some of this, I'm excited to see him be able to transfer. Because this sounds like it sounded like the long version of, we want to play fast, we want to play physical, right? We want to play free.
And yet still saying, I do chase ghosts.
Right, I chase ghosts to some degree because I want to be prepared. But when it comes to downloading that information to the players, we give them so much the meat and potatoes of what they need and we'll allow them to play fast. And this was him talking about it on the offensive side of the football for the Texans, the defensive side for your opponent. That it gives me some encouragement that he's going to even be better at doing kind of the nuclear small things of helping establish
yep.
what we talk about, that swarm mentality that the defense has,
mm-hmm.
These are the types of things that help them. Hey, defensively, we'll give you an idea of the big picture items that the offense is going to get, but outside of that, read, react, go play. And on the offense, this is what it sounds like. I think
mm-hmm.
this is the equivalent of that is, we'll give you some of the things that he's going to try and do, but beyond that, these are the principles that we have. This is how they might hurt us. Go out there,
yeah.
play football, and play really well. And that's the thing that I think gives me encouragement. One, on the offensive line, but two, more generally with the offense. I think that some of that philosophy that clearly works really well on defense is being embedded more on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah.